CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, to explain BDS and Ben & Jerry's. Malcolm, this was a complete surprise to me. I had no idea that Ben & Jerry's was in the mix for hate speech. Please explain BDS as hate speech, and is, I don't ask for an explanation of Ben & Jerry's, but can we now say that they've moved to the villain side until we get more facts?
Well, I think there's a progressive move. The chairperson of Ben & Jerry's, which is an independent board, even though Unilever bought Ben & Jerry's, they have their own board, and this board, this chair, has made many very disturbing comments in the past, and a lot of it is just coming out or was not focused on before. But they have made these kind of comments and political and social comments that were pretty radical and very critical and extreme. But this move, where they have an Israeli manufacturer whose operations are in the south of Israel, not in the territories, and they've said now that they can no longer sell. It's not manufacture. It's just even to sell to Jews and Arabs in the occupied Palestinian territories, OPIs they call it, that this is a violation of, according to most lawyers, of the BDS legislation now exists in 35 states, that companies will not be able to invest with Unilever stock, that the and many supermarkets have already announced that they will no longer carry Ben & Jerry's because they're not going to support hate speech. And this was clearly an expression of discrimination and hate against Israel and the frankly against Palestinians who are losing their jobs when this contract is not renewed, because those who were distributors and worked there at conditions they would never get under the Palestinian Authority will lose their jobs as well. So it's gone beyond, it's not a rational policy where they're trying to help someone. This is simply an act of spite. And unlike previous companies who were subject to the boycotts, they make their ice cream inside Israel. And many others, I think, will line up to take over that that manufacturing capacity. But it's more important in terms of the message that it sends, that people, that you set a precedent of a boycott in a time when we've seen the rising tensions and rhetoric, for them to engage in it and not on a rational basis, I think really has aroused passion from people of every faith, every religion. I was in Texas speaking to the Christians United for Israel. They took a very strong stand on it. Senator Cruz was there. Democratic leaders, as we heard from earlier from Congressman Torres, this has really touched a nerve that people are saying enough is enough.
I note, Malcolm, that Airbnb stumbled into this kind of hate speech several years past, but I believe they recanted. Do we expect Ben & Jerry's to come to its senses and apologize?
Well, the CEO of Unilever has distanced himself from them already, and I think others will, and especially as the legal implications become clear, that they get out of they remove from the state employee index funds, from other funding sources, and that the ramifications will become clear. This was the decision of a very small group, and it's really going to be up to the parent company and to other members of the board or to this board to clearly state that that recanted this policy, and people are not looking to strike back, and they're not looking to harm the company, but they will not buy. And as I say, there are signs in many supermarkets saying, we do not support hate speech and will not carry Ben & Jerry's.
Yes, and of course, Häagen-Dazs is a wonderful substitute, Malcolm. So let's go.
And many more. And they do sell in Israel, but they don't have a factory there. So perhaps they can take over the factory and solve a lot of problems.
Ice cream diplomacy. Iran. What is the status of the JCPOA, Malcolm?
That is a very good question, and nobody is quite sure exactly what the answer is. We know that the Iranians continue to advance their capacity, this is complicating the efforts to revive the 2015 deal. There are some who say the Europeans are now getting cold feet over it because they see that Iran is already or near progressing past the point in which JCPOA would have a difference. They were supposed to, throughout the agreement, remain at least 1 year away from a breakout time until 2026, when now both European and U.S. officials are estimating that they could have enough fissile material for a nuclear weapon within 2 to 3 months. We know that they've been stockpiling. We know there are new facilities that are being opened. They are blatantly proclaiming that they have additional facilities and capacity, and they feel that this is not covered. And with the presence now of Raisi coming on board after August 1st, and they said they couldn't sign a deal till he was on board, although they tried to rush a deal back in May and June, saying you better do it now before he comes on. And he is somebody who's he's called a hardliner. They're all hardliners. He's just a super hardliner, very much in tune with Khamenei. And we've seen the deployment of most of the stock of advanced IR-2M centrifuges over the past year, which are 2 to 3 times faster than the ones they were permitted to use under the accord. So on every front, we're seeing it. At the same time, tremendous tensions within the country, within Iran, where the economic conditions are terrible, and they're relying on, again, a cash bonanza from a deal which would enable them again to pay for their clients in Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis, and around the world, and at the same time offset the terrible economic conditions. There are great shortages. There are strikes amongst the energy sector, the truck drivers, and the most of all, there have been huge demonstrations about the water shortages in Iran. And this is a fifth wave of COVID coming again with a severe water shortage. The hospitals are overflowing. And by the way, none of the sanctions affect the importation of medicines. This is a canard that they created. And we know that where there's a large ethnic population in Khuzestan, there have been very strong demonstrations and people yelling, I am thirsty, and demanding water and more allocation of water. And this has become a very violent incubator, as someone put it.
The north of Israel had red alerts. The IDF struck in Syria. Can I connect this to the arsenal that Tehran is transshipping to Lebanon? Is that what they were hitting?
That's what they were hitting. The strikes were in the Jabal al-Wahid, which is near the Scientific Research Center, which is that area has been hit repeatedly because that's where they store a lot of the weapons. And it's where the Syrian regime's defense factories in al-Safira, which is near Aleppo, are located. The place that was hit hosts the headquarters for some of the facilities that they and weapons warehouses for the Iran Revolutionary Guard and the militias that they back.
We go to the PA, Malcolm. No. First, I wanted to make sure we talked about the red alerts. Do we believe Iran is driving these red alerts, Malcolm? How does Iran benefit by pinpricking against the north of Israel and knowing there will be a counterstrike? What does this do for Iran? Is this Raisi? Is this the Supreme Leader? Why?
It's not Raisi yet. We know that Iran is not beyond provocations. We see it on many fronts. They've opened a new oil terminal in the Gulf of Oman to bypass the Straits of Hormuz. We know that the illegal shipments are skyrocketing, that the number of foreign ships went from 70 to 123 in a short period of time, taking the oil out. So they're violating all of the agreements and restrictions that are supposedly imposed on them. But I don't know that they're behind these border crossings from Lebanon into Israel or the other provocations that have come up. We know that they are supplying the weapons. We know that they're trying to get more and more sophisticated guidance systems onto the missiles that Iran has given to Hezbollah, or Hezbollah has developed with Iran technology. The transshipment through Syria, they did it by boat for a long time, and you know Israel hit some of those boats, or supposedly hit some of those boats, and so they are supplying into Syria. Syria is, by the way, is I think more and more estranged from Iran and more afraid of what Iran's influence long term will be in Syria. So these provocations are probably domestic. They can come from any one of a number of groups, some of which are more directly supported by Iran. And we know that they are, they like to keep the tensions high. They've tried with the tunnels, which are huge investments. People have no idea how much time, construction, money, hundreds of millions of dollars goes into these tunnels, which should be going to the people. And the people now resent it. They don't have food. They don't have, the economic infrastructure is collapsing. The banks are collapsing. Lebanon is near a failed state. I don't think Iran wants to take responsibility for that. Hezbollah doesn't, but has no choice, and will take advantage of these weaknesses in Lebanon. But they also will be stuck with the burden of a country that where millions of people are leaving and trying to leave, but will be hungry and will have to be taken care of. So the situation is very tense and very complicated, and many factors playing into it.
Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. It's very good to visit with him. He's been on the road, maybe a few more weeks on the road. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.